Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rifleman Radio Show. Thank you, everybody, for listening in tonight. I don't know what it's doing where you are, but it's storming here. So if we end up losing power here, and I'm out at the very end of a long line that trails away from the electrical co-op, then CMD will jump in. And he will guide you through this. I'll try and get electrical back if we can. But it's very common for us to lose power, like I said, way out here at the end of the line. Well, once again, thanks everybody for listening. We're going to talk about everyday carry tonight. That's these are the things that the well-prepared rifleman carries in his pocket. On his person, and depending on what he's doing or where he's going, these things may change or they may not. But we're going to talk about that in just a minute. And we certainly encourage you guys, the folks that are listening, encourage you guys to call in with your everyday carry and your suggestions for everyday carry, the things that you carry in your pocket every day, and the things that you think should be that other folks should carry, or that that everybody should have on themselves, or things that you found that don't work, or basically anything that you think would work well as everyday carry. The beginning of the show, we like to thank our local crews. And have you guys call in and thank your local crews for the work that they're doing. The job of an Appleseed Project volunteer is it's a hard one. It's a rough one. If you're doing your job right, it's a hard job. There's a lot of work for no pay. And the only real pay you get is by knowing that you're pushing the mission forward, and then you are helping your fellow Americans to get off the couch, improve their rifle marksmanship, and hopefully that you're spinning them up and launching them off the Appleseed Project rocket launching pad and helping them to become involved in maintaining the freedoms and liberties that we enjoy by virtue of living in this nation. But there's no pay. So everybody likes to hear, thanks, job well done. And I'm certainly going to start off the list myself tonight with Sandy. You guys know Sam. Sam is the co-host here on the show. He may not say much. He pipes in when he wants to, but he's here every time I'm here. You know, every time someone calls and you hear some old first sergeant type voice in your ear asking who you are and what you need, that's Sam D. He's doing the call screening as well. He has worked the switchboard. If something goes wrong with my line, then he's ready there to jump in. So he spends just as many hours doing this, almost as I do. You just don't hear him as much. So Sam, thanks for all the hours you spend helping me with the show. I want to thank the guys up in Dallas, Kirk Wheeler, who is a sticker on the forum. If there is any graphic art that you see at the Odyssey Project, it most probably was generated by Kirk Wheeler, and he's been doing it for several years now. He's a fantastic guy, great shooter, great instructor, and a man to ride the river with. He's a good man, a good family man, and a great graphic artist. The DFW folks, the Dallas-Fort Worth folks, have a great crew. They're building a great Appleseed operation there. And my thanks go out to the whole wide crew there. I'd like to thank the local guys here. Ed Hall is a new instructor that we just picked up. Ed's a great guy, very nice guy. And he does a great job. He did a great job this last weekend with the instruction. Ray Trinan and Kirby Foster. Kirby does Appleseed instruction online, but beyond that, he does the majority of the IT stuff for Appleseed. If there's something that has to be done by or has to be fixed or made or coded or anything else for Appleseed, there's probably a 99% chance that Kirby Foster did it. He's scuzzy on the forum. And not because he doesn't take a bath or anything like that. It's an obscure reference to one of the coding languages that I'm unfamiliar with. And Kirby does a great job. And we've got a ton of other folks that are doing a great job. Like Coonrad, that is a local instructor here. He's been with the program for several years now, and every time I open the doors at the villa, he is there with me. We have Chuck Leeming, Red Dot on the forum, and Chuck is he's a go-getter. I think that in the first 6 months that of him doing Appleseed, I believe he'd done almost 25 or 30, and I think he got close to setting a record for Appleseed on the number of events he'd done in the 1 year. And he travels all over Texas and all over the United States doing events. And I know that I can count on him to turn in a fantastic show whenever he's doing an Appleseed two-day Russell Marksmanship event on the weekend. If you have some folks that you would like to thank, then by all means, call in, give them a pat on the back. If you have an event that is getting ready to come up, then let me know about that too. If you want to promote an event, or if you want to talk about an event that that is already that you guys have already done, you wanted to give like an AAR on the event, then you're welcome to call in too. The number is 347-308-8790. There's a lot of stuff that is in the news recently. I don't know if you guys have heard about it, but there was the sergeant at Fort Hood that was arrested. Now, it wasn't for carrying a rifle. He was arrested for, giving the officers a hard time. His last trial ended up in a mistrial. And he was just retried, and they found him guilty. And I guess they're waiting to sentence him now. He was, I believe he was an active duty sergeant there at Fort Hood who was hiking down the side of the road with his son, and he had a pistol and an AR-15 rifle. And I guess the police had several folks that had called and so the police were, they didn't have any choice. They had to go and check it out. Now, I watched the video and unless there's something I haven't seen, I got to say, I know this will probably make a lot of folks angry, but I don't think that he handled it. I don't think he handled it really in the best fashion. I mean, yes, you're allowed to have a rifle and carry a rifle in Texas, you know, open carry it on your shoulder, stuff like that, certainly are. And I don't think that the officers were disputing that. From what I saw and from what I heard, you know, the one officer was saying, let us just see who you are and then we'll get you on your way. Anyway, I think that this was just a bad handling of the situation. And maybe the officers could have handled it different, but certainly, the guy, I think, put his self and his child in unnecessary danger by disputing the officers there. And I got to tell you that, number one, he wasn't on private property. He's walking down the side of the highway. And I might even stop and ask somebody what they're doing if I see them walking down the road in front of my house. Because we live in a world where things can go wrong. And, you know, it's your right to carry a rifle, open carry it. But if you get out of your car and you have an AR rifle on your shoulder and you're walking down the streets in Houston or anywhere, somebody's going to stop you and ask you what you're doing. And I don't know that that's a bad thing. I think that once they found out who he was and what he's doing, I think that they would have let him be on his way. I know that from teaching the carbine courses, self-defense shooting courses. I know that it was a very dangerous situation that that everybody got put in there. And I'm not sure that I think that I wouldn't have had much of a problem if he would have said, "Hey, listen, can you hand me the rifle or give me the rifle for a minute while we figure this out?" I'd say, "Hey, no problem." I don't know that this wasn't somebody trying to make a point. And once again, don't get me wrong, I'm all for folks being allowed to do this. I'm all for open carry rifle, open carry pistol. But at the same time, there are going to be some bumps getting it worked out, and there's going to have to be some give and take on both sides. I mean, if somebody is walking down the street with a rifle, then somebody may very well stop and ask you what you're doing. And I think that as long as you are respectful and you try and get it resolved, I don't know if this situation could have gone differently. Like I said, I'm sure I'll have plenty of folks that that are angry with me over saying this. I'm just saying that that's my opinion. I think it could have been handled different. Because the other side of it is, if the officers would have just driven by after they got all the calls and stuff, they would have just driven by and said, "Well, you know, it's legal for him to do this, so we're not going to stop and ask him what he's doing or anything." And he got up to the next intersection and started blasting away, then I'm sure there was just going to be just as many people saying, "What was it? What the heck's wrong with those with the officers? Why didn't they stop?" And they had several phone calls, alerting them to the guy. I think there's going to have to be some give and take on this while we're working it out. And that means that even though it's a right, I don't think you're putting yourself in the best position by trying to duke it out in every one of these situations with law enforcement. And there is no way I would have done that with my kid there. You know, I just wouldn't have, I just wouldn't have done it, because even if I was minding my T's and Q's, if something goes wrong and there's some type of shooting starts and my kid catches around, I don't know how happy I'm going to be that I was trying to force the issue. So that's my two cents on it. All right. Now I've got the storm going. Like I said, I've got a storm going here, so I can't. I just lost a satellite, so I can't see what folks in the chat are saying or anything like that. If you got something you want to say, call it in, and we'll get it on the air. Even if you don't want to talk yourself, you can tell Sam, and he'll either type it out for me, or he'll just open his mic and blurt it out himself. So if you have something you want to say, just call in 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. Now, I read an interesting piece the other day in the Washington Post, and they were talking about exactly what I said a few weeks ago, which was that I think that the current administration had learned a neat little trick, which was they had so many scandals going that folks said this it couldn't all be real. you know, they couldn't all be real because it's just that's crazy. That's, let's see, the vast right wing conspiracy trying to gin up a problem, and I think that's exactly what the government is doing now. They're just playing it wide open because they don't care now. They don't care. Even if they get caught, even if they put the scandal on the front page of the paper, which most of the times they don't, because most of the papers are owned by the folks who are either actually involved or peripherally involved, and their stations have been told to remain mum on it. But even if they weren't, even if they ran the stories or they put it on the front page, people are being, they're overrun with this info, and it begins to be meaningless, because every day there's something new. This is a very dangerous situation that we seem to be wading directly into, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if we, it seems to me that we've gone so far that we have, that the current situation with government has gotten so ugly and messy that I don't think it would matter too much who was in power, who was, what party was in power, or who was in charge. I think it's gotten so ugly that both sides are the same way. There's the same ugliness, the same corruption and scandals, the same misrepresentation or non-representation of American citizens. I don't know if this is going to get fixed in any nice, neat fashion. It appears to me that it's going to have to end up getting really ugly before it gets better. That's just my opinion, all right? All right, once again, if you'd like to call in, and maybe perhaps you are, maybe I just can't tell because of the storm and the satellite situation here. I know I can't load the chat, and I can't load the a couple of the other parts of the Block Talk platform. Give it a few minutes. I don't think the system is that big, and if you're trying to call in, just give it a couple of minutes. Or Sam, if you've got somebody that is in the queue and they want to talk, then just break in the line. Let me know. We'll get them on. All right. Tonight we're talking about everyday, and most of the time, a lot of folks will cut this down to EDC. Your EDC. What's your EDC? Your everyday carry. And everyday carry is just as simple as what it's saying. It's what are you carrying on your person every day. And for some people, it may be something very simple. You may be going to your office, your work in your office downtown or something. And your everyday carry for you is going to be your keys, your cell phone. Maybe if you smoke, maybe a cigarette and a lighter. Your a writing utensil like a pen, or that may be it. That may be all you carry. Other folks, the other end of the line, maybe somebody who goes to work with the Customs and Immigration, and their everyday carry is a little bit different. Maybe they've got a Glock 17 or Glock 19 and 4 mags and a belt knife and a collapsible baton and pepper spray and a taser and a good folding knife and a radio, a GPS system, a compass, a good watch. Whatever your everyday carry is, this is the stuff that that you put in your pocket before you leave, and that you take out of your pocket and put on the table, put on the table or your nightstand, you know, when you get home. And it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be different, you know, probably for most every person. But you can always do something to enhance your everyday carry. You can always fit just a little bit, maybe a little something extra in that's going to work for you to help make sure that that you have a little something extra if you need it. And if you guys would like to care to call in with your list of everyday carry, the things that you carry every day, then we'd like to hear it. We'd like to hear what you guys are using and carrying. And you can call in 347-308-8790, and Sam will talk to you for a second off air and then bring you on. Because everybody has, you know, different things that they found over the course of the years that worked good for them. And there may be some of you guys that have something that everybody could use. I mean, if there's something really nifty that you guys know about that the rest of us don't. All right. If it sounds like I'm a little bit stretched out, it's because, like I said, we're in the middle of a big storm here, and I'm in the middle of remodeling and replacing my roof, and the storm is picked this time to come and find all of the little places that I haven't covered with tarps and stuff. So we're just so it looks like a submarine inside here after it's been depth charged, you know, with all the leaks and stuff. All right, there's a on the show page. You know, I put a bunch of photographs of what a lot of different people carry for their everyday carry. Now, normally, what do you guys carry? And what girls carry is, like I said, it's fairly simple. I'll give you an idea of what I carry. Now, I don't go into an office. I work I'm independently here on rurally on a ranch. What I carry is a good Leatherman tool. It's the old Super Leatherman. It's no longer in service, but you know, but there were a lot of them made, and then a lot of people got them as gifts and everything else, and never used them. So I just keep an eye out on eBay, and you know, I'll keep one that's in good condition that I'm running. I'll keep another one that is kind of worn out in case I have to use it roughly or something, or if I need to give it to somebody that's going to use it roughly, like my dad, I always give him my old worn-out ones because he likes to chip concrete and stuff with the blade, and I don't give him the new ones. Anyway, you have this Super Leatherman that I'll carry. I'll have my keys for my vehicles, for the different gates and stuff like that. Those will all be on a carabiner. I'll have my cell phone. I'll have a good writing instrument, usually one of the, you know, the good but inexpensive Vicks. And then I'll have a note pad that I carry so I can write down the notes. And then just a plain Timex Expedition watch. Now, it's just my everyday carry for the for a regular day. Now, on top of that, I'll have whatever handgun I'm carrying for that day. Normally, it'll be like a Glock 17 and 2 Extra Mags. And that would be my everyday carry. I'll have the Leatherman tool, which functions, you know, as a multi-tool, has two good blades on it, and then that's my working everyday carry. But your everyday carry changes whenever your situation or your mission changes. Now, if I want to, that's for the daytime. Now, if I'm going to do the same thing but at night, then I will add at least two types of lights. Or if I'm going out with the family to dinner at night, or if I'm doing anything where I'm going to be out after dark, then normally I'll carry usually at least two extra flashlights. Now, one of those will be some type of a small pocket flashlight that can fit inside of my pocket very easily, no big bulge or anything like that. And usually it's around like a 200 lumen flashlight. Now, I don't personally don't spend a lot of money on the flashlights because I'm really good at misplacing them or breaking them in different cases and stuff. So right now I've got I bought a stack of the flashlights from Lowe's, and these are, let's see if I can get the name off of it here. I think that they were MagTech lights, and it was $8 for an all metal 200 lumen LED flashlight. Has the sharp doubled striking ring on it, the button on and off switch, and $8. Which I thought was a really, you know, really good deal, and I'm very happy with that because they're inexpensive enough that, you know, if it gets broken or lost, no problem. And it's a nice bright light. It's the 3 AAA battery type, which most of these are now. If it's not a CR123, then usually they're the 3 AAAs. Some that use double A's, singles and doubles. I've got some of the old mag lights, and I've got some of the newer LEDs that uses a single double A battery. And then I'll usually have another light that is one of the smaller types of lights that normally would fit on your keychain. And what I've done is I'll just take it and put it on a dog tag, and I wear it around my neck. Now, the little lights like that, they're not bright, but they are plenty good enough for you to be able to get to work your way through a room, to see if somebody's in a room. They give you plenty of light for that. So I'll have usually one of the larger lights in my pocket, and then I'll have just a little light keychain around my neck. All right. And that's if I'm going out at night, but not camping out or overnighting or something like that. Just going out either like to eat dinner, or going shopping. Anything that requires me to be out after dark. Now, if I'm going to do the same thing, but I'm going out to eat with my family, if I'm going somewhere that maybe has one of the things that I found now that I really like and that I would recommend for most folks is to find a good, a really nice, dependable, and you can find them very inexpensively now, neck knife. And I like this because the neck knives are easily accessible. They don't clutter up your pockets. And you can get a really nice, dependable type neck knife with a good sheath, a nice good blade. You can get them for around 7 to 12 bucks now. You can get them on eBay. And I would certainly recommend a good neck knife for folks if you're going to be out in public, and especially if there are places where you can't take a firearm. Then having a good neck knife is better than nothing. Having a firearm would be much better, but if you can't get one, if you can't carry one, then having a good neck knife is a good second best type option. Now, normally, and I know it sounds almost like overkill, but if I'm going to go out for dinner with the family and stuff, I'll still take the Leatherman, because the Leatherman has plenty of tools on it, and I've used all the tools, and I've used my Leatherman over and over again. It's not one of those things that you put in your pocket and it never gets used. I mean, I've worn out a dozen of them by using them, and if I go out and eat with my family, then I'll carry the Leatherman, and I'll carry the neck knife, but I used to carry a nice Ken Onion Leek assisted opening knife with a belt with a pocket clip on it. And then the flashlight, one in my pocket, one on the neck, and car keys, the pen. Now, let me stop real quick and talk about the pen, too. And I know that this sounds like we're going, like we're almost like we're getting overboard, like we're gearing up for a zombie attack or something like that. But having a pen, like a good ballistic type of pen, and there are a lot of folks that make these, and they write perfectly. They function as a writing tool perfectly. But usually they'll have a strengthened or hardened body, and they can also double as a striking object. And you can carry a pen in places that you can't carry any other type of edged weapon or anything like that. Like, for instance, on an airplane. You can carry the pen, You can't carry any type of a pocket knife or a Leatherman or anything like that, but you can carry the pen. And normally I'll just make sure that you know, when I'm heading out, I'll pick up a pen and put it in my pocket, and normally is one of the ballistic ones. Because why not? If I'm going to carry a pen anyway, why not carry one that, you know, that could function for multiple uses? There are a lot of good tools that are made now. And the what you carry for your everyday carry, like I said, is going to depend on where you're going, what you're doing, why you're, you know, why you're going, where you're going, and what you're doing, what you have to worry about or not worry about. I mean, if you're going out to dinner with your family and and you haven't made a ton of enemies, then you don't have to. You certainly don't have to get ready for a zombie attack. But you should just get used to carrying the things that you're going to, the things that you might need as part of your everyday carry. Mine isn't always exactly the same. I mean, mine changes sometimes daily. Depends on where I'm going and what I'm doing. And I may add or subtract things depending on where I'm going and what I'm doing. And maybe someplace I can't take some certain item, and maybe I can. I know that for the longest time, and they make a lot of different type of credit card type tools, and now they make like a credit card type knife that is really inexpensive. I think you can get it for like $4 or $5 now. But I had a really good it was called a Spider Card, and it was a very well built, well engineered credit card type knife. Now it was the same size as a credit card. But like I said, it was a very well-engineered, very strong, and when opened up, it was actually a very large, mean-looking blade, and I don't know what exactly happened to it. Whenever I lost a wallet out in the field, the card was with it, and now they're no longer made by Spider Co. You get them on eBay, but expect to pay, you know, between $80 and $150 for them now, you know, if they're in good condition. But that's certainly an option for you, is to have some type of a card-sized tool that you can carry in your wallet. and it's going to depend on what you're going to do for the day, whether you're going to stay out overnight, whether you're going to be in the city, or if you're going to be hiking down a trail. The stuff that you're putting in your pocket is going to depend, you know, pretty much basically on what you are doing for the day, or for the day or the week or the night. Now, one of the other things that I do, I'm not sure you could call it everyday carry on my person as much, is I have a really good blowout kit, and you know, it's got a really nice bandage with the clotting agent in it. It's got the Asherman chest seal, it's a tourniquet. All of the stuff in it is very small, and I carry that with me wherever I am. Now, it doesn't go in my pocket when I go into the store, but if I walk out to my car, I carry it with me. I put it in the console. If I get in the tractor, I put it there with me because if something happens, you need to have access to a first aid kit. You may need it really quick. A lot of machinery and stuff I work on, you know, it certainly would not even wouldn't even blink at tearing off a finger or a hand or an arm. So I make sure that I have that right there with me. Now, like I said, if I get out and I go into a store or to a restaurant, I usually don't carry it with me because it's in my vehicle. And if I needed to, I would guess I'm just depending on going and getting it out of the vehicle. Now, if I am getting out of my vehicle and I am going to walk the fence line, or if I'm going hunting, anytime I'm going to be away from the vehicle, then yeah, then usually I do carry it with me. And I'll either put it in a side pocket of my pants, or I'll put it in a jacket pocket, or I've got a very small over-the-shoulder bag. It's just like a small pouch, and it'll go inside the pouch with a bottle of water or something. And that's if I'm away from the vehicle, because I feel like I feel like that you should have a first aid kit within reach, if at all possible. Now, if I worked at an office, then I would have one in my office drawer. I've got them in most of the vehicles. I've got the kits in the vehicles, and I've got it at home. I've got one in the barn. I've got several down at the range. Wherever I usually go to around here, I've got the first aid kits already there. And then with my vehicle. All right. So if I were you, I'd make sure I had them at my place of work, you know, my business, you know, wherever you're going to be, I would make sure that I had one there during the day. All right. I cannot tell if anybody, Sam, can you, if you can hear me, can you just mention in my ear that you can hear me? And I can't tell if I'm going out or not because I've lost all the chat and everything else. You there?
Yeah, you're going out, Scout.
Okay, great.
You're going out.
All right, well, listen, what about you, Sam? Jump in here. whenever you're working there, well, depending on where you're working, I'm sure, because are you still working on the base?
I am. Depending on whether or not I'm heading out to work and where I'm going to work, I have a pretty specific list of things that I carry, and I do a checklist: knife, keys, wallet, smokes, lighter. And if I'm not going to work on the main base, I'll be putting a Star PD and two spare magazines on. But I wouldn't do that if I had to go out on the base, but.
Right, and that is certainly you know, one of the options that folks should probably consider is, even if you don't smoke, it sure wouldn't hurt you to have some way to start a fire on you. Now, for women, it's a lot easier. So they got these big. They usually have some type of purse, and they can hide tons of gear in there. For guys, it might be a little bit harder, but, you know, even if I didn't smoke, I would still have a way to start a fire on me. And then if you look at the photographs that I posted from a good number of different people's everyday carry, You'll see a lot of those folks have chosen to add a whistle to their gear. Now, I think it's a great idea. If you are, if you're trying to make yourself heard, and you were out, out in the wilderness or something, that's a perfect way to do it. But even if you're in the city, and you want to get the attraction, you want to attract the attention of a peace officer or something like that, that's a great way to do it, to blow the whistle. I don't know how much, maybe yelling or shouting, maybe that wouldn't do anything. But a whistle is usually always going to attract the attention of a law enforcement officer because they're issued whistles and they use them, as part of their everyday carry. They use them, to give warning to people or to attract attention and stuff like that. So if you need to get the attention of somebody or even of a lot of people out in public, blowing a whistle might be just a perfect way to do that. For women, the same thing. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I know that there's been a lot of fun poked lately at some of the folks in government telling women that they don't need firearms, that all they need is a good rape whistle and to leave their firearms at home. Now, I'm certainly not going to tell you that because I don't believe that. But I will tell you that that having a whistle probably wouldn't be a bad idea. And having it in, if you're a woman and you have it in your purse, having it clipped somewhere or a safety pin somewhere where you can find it easily is a great idea, too, I think. Maybe for a lot of women, I was looking at some of the stacks of stuff that the women had for everyday carry. A lot of them had pepper spray. They had some type of pepper spray. I think that's a great idea too. And once again, I'm not going to tell you that it is better than a handgun because it's not. But it's certainly a great tool that you can add to your everyday carry. I keep pepper spray in my vehicle, and I have no problem with anybody carrying pepper spray, and I have no problem with using it. I think that there are certainly plenty of situations where pepper spray may be the thing that will work for you, where a firearm may not, or a firearm may be too much. We talked about this several weeks ago. We were talking about the women's self-defense and safety course and stuff, and spray should never be thought of as a standalone self-defense weapon. If anything, pepper spray should be thought of and used like it was designed to be used, and that is as a way to break contact with whoever is giving you trouble or attacking you, a way to break their loop and break contact with them, and just to give you a chance to either remove yourself from the situation and run, or to try and get a hold of a better self-defense type weapon, something like that. And, guys can use this just as well as women. I'm sure most guys probably they don't like to think about it because they don't want to have to say, yeah, then I pull out my pepper spray and spray the guy. But it might be just a thing that saves your life. Like I said, I keep a container of pepper spray. I keep it handy with a lot of my gear. All right, looks like I just got.
Hey, Scout.
Yeah,
you've got.
Looks like I just got the. I just got the switchboard back. I got the switchboard back just now, and I can see that there are some people on there now. All right. Rachel?
Grab Rachel on line two.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I don't know what it's like where you are, but it turned into a dreadful mess here. I don't know if you guys can hear the thunder.
This is Rachel. I'm getting the storm too.
Well, Rachel, welcome to the show. Are you going to tell us about your everyday carry?
Yeah, well, I was just listening as I'm getting ready to head out of town for a shoot I'm doing this weekend. You already mentioned about concealed carry weapons and various other good and helpful things. A couple of things that I didn't hear mentioned. You've probably seen me carrying my phone and my keys around. I'm not a fan of carrying things in my purse that I want to have with me. So I wouldn't be a fan of carrying my flashlight or a concealed carry weapon or extra magazine things in my purse and counting on having it just because a purse can easily be taken away. So I like to carry things on my person. And I have a really cool phone case. It's called the Incipio Stowaway that I can actually fit a credit card and ID and $20 bill into. So all I have to do is carry the phone case and keys, and I'm pretty much set without a purse.
Right. I don't think I've ever seen you with a purse, but I think that is a good way, if you can do that, that's a good way to make sure that you have your everyday carry, because some people don't, because some people, they've got dresses on or whatever, and they've got a purse, and that's fine. But if you don't, if you can keep it on your person, then that's the best way to do it. I believe I've seen you with several different kinds of setups. I know I've seen you carry some kind of a little pouch or something on your belt that also had a flashlight. And you've got a clip knife in your pocket, and what else were you saying? You said that something that you didn't hear was about how people were carrying.
Oh no, I just wanted to talk about specifically the phone case. It holds a credit card. So credit card, ID. It's often helpful to have in case of emergency contact information. You can have that on your phone, possibly. Also, a $20 bill. I think a lot of times we prepare for a worst-case scenario, think about self-defense, but it's very likely, it's very easy for a credit card to get locked up or lost, and just having, or maybe you're somewhere where they don't even take a credit card. So having a $20 bill is just a great thing to have on you, on your person all the time. So that's the phone case that I have. It's a stowaway case that actually holds those cards. And then you mentioned the flashlight. Yes, I do always keep a flashlight just clipped either to my waistband or in my pocket. And I found one that's small enough that no matter what I'm wearing, it can fit there. So even if I'm dressed up, it still fits onto my waistband. I can hide it there if I'm going to be in a more professional situation or a dressy situation where I don't want it showing in my pocket.
And like I was saying earlier, you can also get I'll tell guys, folks right now that usually, for the most part, none of the gear that I carry is usually very expensive. Now, the only concessions I would make to to paying a lot of money would be usually to whatever blade or tool that I'm carrying, because that usually benefits you to get the you know, the best quality tool you can get for that. Flashlights, you know, now you can spend a lot of money on a flashlight, and and I'm not saying that that's wrong. I'm just saying that they make a lot of really good, inexpensive flashlights that I would have no problem using. The flashlights that they make now, you know, you can get a good $10, $15, $20, $30 flashlight that can be of comparable quality to some of the ones that they make now that are, you know, $150, $200 flashlights.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I don't want people to say, I'd get it. You know, I'd get a good flashlight for me to carry, but I just don't have the money. And you just go to Harbor Freight or to, you know, to any of the places that that have, you know, quality. They have the inexpensive, but the good quality gear, expensive flashlight. The same thing with the smaller, like the keychain flashlights. They make some really good, inexpensive keychain flashlights. You can get one for $2. Like I said, I've got several of the dog chain necklaces, you know, dog tag necklaces, and I keep one of the inexpensive keychain flashlights on a clip around my neck. I don't put it in my keychain just because it just seems to me that every time I've done that, the keychain goes in my pocket, and then the light goes on, and then it's dead, you know.
Yeah.
So I just I keep a nice, good, nice new one. I don't use it, and I'll use a flashlight that I carry in my pocket for looking around. I just use the one that I put around my neck as a backup, and you're right, too, about cash. Even if you're going to use your credit cards or whatever to pay, you still need to keep some cash on you. Most folks will tell you to keep around $100, you know, in smaller denominations, like, you know, 320s, and then make the rest into 10s, 5s, and 1s, so that you can use the cash if you need to. And
right.
And then don't just use it. Just use, you know, use whatever your credit card or your debit card. Use that. But make sure you've got the cash on you in case you need it. You were talking about the phone holders, too. I've been looking for a good phone holder forever, and I finally saw that Mark Martinez had one, and I asked him to keep his eye out and grab one for me, too, because I can't tell you how many bad phone holders I've gone through and dumped my phone and lost it and tore the phone holders up on and on. You know, your phone is probably going to be, nowadays, is going to be one of the most important parts of your everyday carry. And you can also download apps for your phone of every size and use, all the way from the flashlight app that most phones you can download now. And that just keeps the flash on your phone. It turns it on and keeps it on and lets you use it as a flashlight. And you know, I found that to be a very good app, too, because you really don't have your phone right there in your pocket and ready to go. And you can very easily grab the phone and hit the flashlight app. And you've got a nice bright light. And a lot of other folks go so far, if you have like some type of an iPhone, then you have the ability to, you know, to download, you know, 15 or 20 books on survival if you want to on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take any more or less room. The only bad thing about it is, know, folks, the phones run on electricity. And if you don't have electricity to recharge it, then you may have a problem. And if there's some type of a grid down situation, then a lot of times that's going to affect the towers and the ability to rebroadcast your signal to get it somewhere. But normally you have the ability to text even if you can't talk. That's still a plus for that. Can you think of any other things that you have as far as everyday carry or things that you would suggest to folks?
One more thing just popped into my head on the subject of phones. Make sure you have a phone charger around. I mean, I don't carry one in my pocket, but I definitely have them at my house, and I always keep one in my car. I tend to drive a lot at night. I'll often be coming home from out of town by myself at night, and it's really important to me and to my family for me to have a phone that's charged so I can let them know, you know, I'm on my way or I'm stopping somewhere. And it's easy for your phone to die. It's a little thing that we don't think about, but it can be a safety issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is also something that I put. I do the same thing with the phone chargers as I do with the first aid gear. And that's it. I put them everywhere that I'm going to be. I mean, I've got, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. They make them fairly inexpensive now, too. You can get them, don't buy them from the grocery store or from the gas station, because they're very expensive there, but you can usually go online and get a good charger for like $2, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then buy you a half dozen of them. Put them in your car, put it at your office, put it, put them wherever you're going to be. And I also have the adapters for them that I'll have. I usually have one in each car, too, and that's the ones that will change the cigarette lighter adapters into a wall socket adapter, and make sure that you have a way to recharge it. Now, you can also go online, and you can get, now they finally have, the technology has gotten to the point where they've got the solar chargers for your phones, and they're at the point now where they're not that expensive, and they're fairly small. I wouldn't consider it everyday carry in my pockets. Now, if I lived in the city, though, I probably would have a backpack as part of my everyday carry. I'd probably keep a backpack on and wear it everywhere I went in the city. I mean, that's just what I did when I lived in the city, and it's probably what I would do if I was back in the city, because I'd want to carry a little bit more stuff than what I carry out here. And the reason I don't carry more out here is because I'm usually in my vehicle, you know, wherever I'm working, I'm at my vehicle,
right.
In my vehicle. If I do take off, if I say, okay, I'm gonna head out down the fence line, I'm gonna go, you know, from this fence line to back over here or something, then I do have a little almost like a messenger bag that I'll put on, and it'll have my first aid gear and a bottle of water and, you know, some extra stuff that I'll take with me. Because if I do that, I usually have a rifle with me as well. So I wouldn't carry the solar charger on my person if I was walking around, but I would certainly have it in my vehicle or in the bag that I was going to take somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do make them now. Like I said, they make them inexpensive enough that you can get one at a pretty decent price, and they're small enough that they can fit in your bag. Now, I think that they make them about, looks to me like about 5 inches by 6 inches, you know. All right, Rachel, stay on the line. I'm going to bring on another caller here, Lee from Michigan. And Lee, welcome to the show.
Hello.
I got a couple things. You want to talk about your grandmother's everyday
care.
Yeah,
that's one of the things. I don't know that I would have called her. She knew a lot about canning, cooking, all that kind of stuff, but I don't know how prepared she was for an emergency. But one thing she always had with her was a hat pin, old style, 3.5, maybe 4 inches long, black kind of finish on it, and a little knob on the end. And I asked her about that. She wasn't wearing her hair, her hats really, anymore so much. And I asked her, what do you do? Why is that in your purse? She said, well, if anybody tries to mess with me, I'm going to stick it right in them.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we need to bring back that style, you know. I mean,
women used to carry and wear the hat pins all the time. I think if I was a woman, I think I would still do that. I mean, if I had a hat,
I would
still do that.
I would not have wanted her to stick me with that, I'll tell you. So, can I talk to you about a couple other things quickly?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello? One thing, I used to carry a pepper spray, but I got asthma, and I had it when I carried the pepper spray, actually. I gave up carrying pepper spray because I read that asthmatics ought to be pretty careful about that. It can give you problems if you're an asthmatic, maybe more problems than you're having already, you know.
Well,
so that's
one of the
thing.
I tell folks about pepper spray is when I'm doing a class for the for the women for the self-defense and safety, or even if what I'm talking to it about guys, is if you're going to carry pepper spray, then I would recommend that you get one of the containers of pepper spray and you spray it, spray a decent amount in your hand and then kind of hold it up around your face where you can get a little whiff of it and see how you react when you get a dose of it. Because one of the things I can guarantee you is that if you start spraying pepper spray, is that you're going to get some. So you need to know how you're going to react to it. Because if you have some type of a allergic reaction, or if you find that you cannot deal with pepper spray, then you don't need to be carrying it.
Right, and that's why I don't carry it anymore. I usually have a couple of pocket knives, big old red handkerchief, 38 special snub nose, and, you know, the phone. Nowadays I got a cell phone. I'm talking to you on a cell phone at the moment. And miscellaneous junk, you know, spare ammo and speed strips for the 38. Right now I'm home. All the stuff that I normally carry is in my pants. I'm wearing sweatpants and a vest, and I have the handkerchief and the 38 on me at the moment. So, yeah, the rest I figure I can always scoop up if I need it, you know.
Right.
I'm a little light on fire-making materials. I really ought to do something about that. And it's deer season up here, so I have a little bigger pocket knife than you normally have. And I just realized that I've been running without a compass for a while here. I've been hunting fairly restricted areas, but I should really find that and put it in my pocket too, you know. So.
Well, things like the compass or fire-starting materials and stuff like that, that's not part of I wouldn't always consider that part of your everyday carry unless...
Oh, no.
Unless
right
you're
now
going
it should
to,
be since
to,
I'm hunting deer, you know.
Right, unless you're going to be in a situation where you need it. You know, if you're going to be... And that would be if any time that you're headed out, like if you're hiking or if you're going to go somewhere that where you may be off-road, then you can make a compass part of your everyday carry for that. The same thing with fire starting gear. Now I would carry a lighter with me, no matter what. Like I said, even if I didn't smoke, I would carry a lighter with me just because I think it's a good idea to have the ability to, I'm not talking about just starting a fire to keep warm and stuff. I think it's a good idea to have the ability to start a fire if you needed to, either for signaling or right. So
might need to cook a squirrel or
something. Right. Well, yeah. if you're gonna be out, out in the wilderness, then certainly that would be part of your everyday carry. You'll alter your everyday carry
you know, for where you're going to be, for where you're headed out there.
Yeah. Well, I usually start carrying matches in small game season and carry them right through deer hunting, you know. But this year, for some reason, I didn't do it. And it's been one of the things kind of in the back of my mind. It's turned a little colder now, you know. And that's been in the back of my mind for a few days. I haven't really gotten around to doing it. So I'm going to have to remind myself tomorrow and make sure I round that stuff up. Hey, it's been nice talking to you. I called up about, I don't know, 3-4 years ago maybe and talked for a little while about something or other. So I'll take off. Take care.
All right. Thank you for calling in. And listen, you're
sure.
Welcome to call in any time, okay, Lee?
Sure.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Now, I saw that Sam had written in, hey, somebody call in, I'm getting lonely. Well, I do like it when you guys call in, because that's the whole reason I do this show live, is so that you guys will have the ability to call in. If it sounded like I was getting lonely, it probably wasn't so much lonely as it was, like I said, you guys, you can't see what I'm doing here, but at different times, I'm doing different things. That can go all the way from one time I was doing the show while I was directing three or four folks on getting cattle off of the highway and back into a corral right across the street. And I couldn't go any further because the phone started losing signal when I went more than like 150 feet from the house. I've had kids come up to me in the middle of the show with splinters in their feet or in their fingers or you name it. And tonight was me walking around trying to put buckets under the leaks that I was telling you about. I've got a house that's over 100 years old, parts of it. And it seemed that when the people who had it for the first 100 years, that when they got ready to repair the roof or put a new roof on, they didn't worry about taking the old roof off. Places it has five layers of roof on it. So I've been slowly taking the layers off so that I can get to the point where I can completely redo the roof. And I'm going to have to do it a little bit at a time because it's too big a job to do all at once. But I'm taking the layers of the roof off and trying to make sure that it doesn't leak. But every time it rains, you know, I'll find some new leaks right now because the initial roof was, in places, was lathe and cedar shake. And then that got a layer of composition shingles on top of the cedar shake. Then it got a layer of tar paper on top of that. Then in some places it got a layer of tin on top of that. And then on top of that was some type of a strange mixture that's almost like a concrete. There's a an aggregate mixture that has looks like some type of a mortar base that holds it together. And then a lot of things like gypsum and stuff like that were mixed into it, you know. And then that is up on top. Now, the house is built on pier and beam and on blocks. And it sits on top of the Texas black clay. So the house is usually in continual movement. You know, if the ground dries up so it's cracking, then the house starts moving, you know, with the soil movement. And that means that as the house flexes, so does the roof. So the old position and stuff like that, it may snap or fracture in places. And, you know, for a while I was repairing that as it went along, but it's just, it's too much. And now... like I said, on top of my regular chores, I'm trying to make sure that I'm trying to get the roof ready to replace too. So tonight was, when I was talking to you guys, it was also a ballet of putting out bowls to catch water in new places that the house appeared to be leaking tonight. So thank you guys for your patience in that. Okay, Rachel, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Can you think of anything additional that you would recommend for women?
Not necessarily. I mean, a lot of times women really need a lot of the same things that men would. I mean, they need a flashlight. Everybody needs to need a flashlight equally. You mentioned a whistle. That I don't actually carry one. I think that's a smart idea. Something else that bugs me a lot about women is the shoes that they wear. For me, it's important to always wear shoes that I can walk in, I can run in. And, you know, I guess it's not as important to a lot of other girls seeing their footwear choices. But for me, that's something I wouldn't really put on my everyday carry list, but it's a consideration. It kind of falls into a similar category. You know, just wear shoes that I can run in if I want to, if I need to.
Right. And I'm telling you, I see a lot of strange shoes on women at times. And I've certainly asked my wife many times. I said, you're really going to wear those all day long? And because I'll look at it and I'll just see pain or just danger, you know, danger, Will Robinson, because it looks like you could fall very easily. And certainly, like you said, if you needed to run, I don't know how well that's going to work. I know you see folks, you see women a lot of times shucking their shoes and running,
sure.
But I wouldn't consider that a great idea either, because you know, maybe you don't want to run on certain things that are out there on the ground. But
mm-hmm.
That would have to be, like you said, I really couldn't consider that an everyday carry. But I do know that I see a lot of women that are commuting and stuff like that, especially when I lived downtown. I would see them, they would have like either a backpack or a big purse, and they may be dressed up really nice, really fancy, but they'd be wearing a pair of, sneakers or running shoes or something. And I'm just assuming that when they got to their office, they would switch to their dress shoes and then, put the other ones back in the bag. But you can do that, and I certainly would recommend that, that you have, no matter what your fancy dress is for the evening, because I would recommend it for guys too, and that is having a pair of shoes that you can walk in your vehicle, because if your vehicle stops functioning, you may need to walk. Now, one of the things that I didn't mention that I always have on me is a pair of leather gloves. I always have them on, no matter what I'm wearing. Even if I'm wearing a suit, I have a nice pair of leather, black leather work gloves that I'll put in my pocket with a suit, because there have been plenty of times that, I was going to a wedding a couple of years ago. You know, I had a flat, I was dressed up really nice and everything, and he has to change the flat, and I put the gloves on. That kept my hands nice and clean and kept them from getting injured at the last minute. But you never know when you're going to have to, and I started doing this because of two things. One, I was on an aircraft that had a very bad landing. And then another aircraft within the next year or so had a similar bad landing and caught on fire, and a lot of folks got hurt. And so I altered my flight carry, include a cotton jacket, leather gloves, and then I also had a large enough cotton bandana. It wasn't the regular bandana that you carry in your pocket. It's a double size one that they have. I got that so that I could wrap that around my head, because if there was a flash fire in the plane, I wanted a good cotton jacket and leather gloves and a cotton bandana that I could protect my skin with, because you don't want anything that's synthetic or that's going to melt to your skin. And it's like the folks will tell women that they would advise them not to fly in stuff like pantyhose and synthetics. And then I had then there was a person that I knew that to an accident, and they had their, I believe the kids were in the vehicle too, and the vehicle caught fire, and the person was trying to get the kids out of the vehicle. And it wasn't that he was afraid of the fire. He was grabbing onto the hot steel with all of his might and pulling on it. It just wasn't doing any good because the hot metal was melting the skin, and the skin was just sliding off. You know, he couldn't get a grip because the skin was just sliding off of his hands. Wow. And so after that, after those two things, I've always carried leather gloves as part of my everyday carry. It'll always go in my pocket so that so I have something that goes in between my hands and what I'm grabbing. And they've come in handy over and over and over again. And I use my hands every day, and so I know that all it takes is three or four good punctures or cuts on my hands to make my week miserable. So I try and protect my hands as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely seen you with your gloves. That reminds me, there's also the other extreme. There's cold weather. Something that my mom actually taught me years ago was to make sure I always have warm blankets in my car or a warm jacket. And living in Central Texas, it doesn't necessarily get super cold very often, but when it's cold, it's cold. And if I have car trouble or have to be outside taking care of my car, walking to the gas station, I don't want to be caught in the cold wearing something that's not going to protect me from that. So I always try to keep an extra jacket or a couple jackets in the car, maybe a blanket. Just throw it in the trunk and leave it there in case I need it.
Right, right. And I think we talked about vehicles and stuff a month or so ago, but I would certainly add that to what we're talking about now. If you're talking about everyday carry, you got what it really refers to is what you're actually carrying on your person, but
right.
You can take it up to the next notch, which is what you do if you're in a vehicle every day, then that can certainly be added to. You can certainly add things onto what you're going to carry in your vehicle, because now if you've got a vehicle, then you can certainly stage a lot more gear and stuff in there. And
sure.
The only time you have to worry about the smaller number of things you carry, you know, is when you leave the vehicle. But yeah, if you keep in your vehicle, I would certainly recommend. I believe last time I was talking to folks about it, I keep a couple of the extra large contractor size trash bags. I have a poncho and a rain jacket behind the seat, as well as a nice thick old wool sweater, and I try and choose wool for cold weather gear if it's not some of the more expensive synthetics, because wool has the ability to retain heat even when wet, And then all of the rest of the stuff that you can keep in your vehicle, which is like a would be a mini list of things that you keep in your home.
Right.
Some extra water. I usually have at least a gallon of water in all of the vehicles.
Right.
And then some form of food, and usually with the food that I put in the vehicle, it's usually like the same kind of stuff that I put in my like in my apple seed, my sheet boss bag. It's usually something that I'm not crazy about eating, so that I won't go digging for it and eat it. You know, at the first hunger pangs.
Right.
So I'll usually have something like I'll have three or four tins of sardines that I'll put in my sheet boss bag. And the same thing for the vehicles. I'll usually rotate a couple of cans of treat or Spam will be in the vehicles, along with a glass jar of peanut butter, and then a spoon in the glove compartment box. A good first aid kit, like I was talking about earlier, that'll always be in the vehicle, no matter, because I've got one in each of the vehicles. And I'll usually have another good light. And the vehicles, a lot of times, even though they're not as good as some of the other lights you can get now, normally in the vehicles I'll keep a 3D cell mag light. And those will go into the door pockets on the vehicles. In each of the vehicles, I've got either a 3 or 4 cell D-cell mag light. And mm-hmm. right now, they're the conventional bulbs. I'd like to buy the kits and put the LEDs in there. But I've yet to have a mag light bulb go out on me, so I'm not that worried about it. But I keep those because even though they don't put out as much light as most of the lights half their size now, a four D cell flashlight is one of the few legal things that you can carry in your vehicle that could function, as a form of self defense. I don't know how it is in most people's states, but in Texas, you're not allowed to carry any kind of a club. If you have something in your vehicle, it needs to have some other function than just being a club. If you carry a cutoff pool cue, that's illegal because that doesn't have any function other than beating people with. If you have a baseball bat that's cut off, then it's the same thing. Now, you can carry a full-size baseball bat because that has another function. But I carry the D-cell lights right there in the door panels on all the vehicles because it's a flashlight and it can be used, to assist you with self-defense. And then in each of the vehicles, I also carry safety gear like the road flares. And the road flares can be used if you've got a breakdown to make people let people see you if you're on the side of the road so they don't come flying up on you at night and ram into you or your vehicle while you're trying to change a tire or something like that. And they can be used for a lot of other purposes, signaling and stuff like that. So I make sure that all of the vehicles have some of the good old-fashioned sulfur road flares in them. There's also a 6-foot length of air compressor line, some of the old rubber air compressor line, and then a 1-gallon empty bucket that had previously held coolant. Then I've got a full 1-gallon container of coolant. The hose and the empty bucket are there if for some reason I had to, in an emergency situation, try and siphon some fuel out of some other vehicle or something. Now, I'm going to tell you that that this is illegal to do. If they catch you siphoning fuel out of somebody's vehicle, it's no different than stealing it from a store or anything else, or stealing the hubcaps off the vehicle. It's a crime, mm-hmm. it's a criminal event. And I would not do it, and I would not advise you to do it, unless it were in some emergency situation where you would say, look, I'm willing to take the hit on this because I feel like that the situation is dangerous enough that I'm willing to get a ticket for this if I have to because I feel it's that dangerous. And if it is, then you can make the decision on whether you want to take that chance or not, or you want to do that.
Right.
But
we'll
I make sure
analysis.
That I give myself the ability to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were mentioning earlier, you can keep a lot of things in your car. Something my friends and I realized is that obviously it's impossible for each of us to carry everything we might possibly need in any situation. You can fill your house in your car, but you're not going to have it on you. But each of us kind of has our own little collection of items that we usually keep with us. Like I have a friend who's an EMT, and she is always going to have her medical backpack with her. A lot of things past just the basic things that I'm not going to have on me. But I know if she's with me, if we're taking a simple little day trip somewhere, she has that backpack with medical supplies and she's wearing it. My friends know what I carry, and so I'm going to have that available. Each one of them has their own little group of things. We have the survivalist ones. We have the fire-starting people and the people who are always going to have food and water with them. And so if you're traveling with a group, especially if you know what each person has, it's a good thing. It's a very helpful thing. You can kind of help each other out. It's that community there.
Right. I haven't traveled with you, but I've traveled with some of the other Battle Road staff, and we'll do the same thing with gear, even firearms and stuff.
Right, exactly.
I was getting ready to go somewhere with Bill the other day, and we talked about it before he went. He asked me what I was going to carry, and I told him, he said, okay, then I was going to carry a carbine along with the rest of my gear, with my pistol and anything else. I was going to take a carbine with me on the road. He said, all right, then he'll take a shotgun and the ammunition and stuff for the shotgun. So we kind of coordinated accessories.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good kind of coordination. And, not that you're going to steal everybody else's supplies, but there are some things that are very shareable. If I'm carrying a flashlight and we're both walking up a road, well, we can both use the lights. Medical emergency supplies, we aren't each going to need those, but it's helpful if somebody has them.
Right. And in the vehicle, of course, I always carry a full medical kit in the vehicle. Now, I feel like whenever I carry, I certainly carry it any time I'm carrying a firearm. I always carry a medical kit, but I carry the medical kit no matter where I am when I'm with the vehicle. So it's a full kit,
mm-hmm.
enough to do, whatever comes up. And I've got one for each of the vehicles, a large kit. And I make sure that whenever somebody's with me, I make sure that they know where it is so that, if we get into an accident and I'm incapacitated, and I want to make sure that they know where the kit is so they can start hopefully helping me if they can. So, and the same thing with any of the rest of the gear. I mean, if we're on the road somewhere, then I'll tell the folks, hey, I've got such and such behind the seat or under the seat. There's a fire extinguisher under your seat and my seat. And I'll let them know where the safety gear and stuff is and what I plan to do in the event of an emergency, just so that they're on the same page with me.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
I see that Ed is laughing at your
at my idea of cold.
Degrees. Yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, it gets below 70, and I am freezing cold, and I'm going for my jacket. I'm not kidding about that. I was just checking out the weather for the shoot I'm doing this weekend. It's going to be a high of like somewhere in the 40s, and I'm shivering already. Yeah, that's another reason. I definitely keep my heavy jacket in the car. If it's cold, if it's my version of cold, I will need it.
Right. All right. Well, we've got here, and where are you right now, Ed? You said that the high there is going to be 27. Where are you right now?
I'm home right now. I'm going to San Antonio this week, and I'm teaching a CHL class tomorrow, and then I'm doing apple seed at a new range, actually, this weekend, Saturday.
Right, right. No, I was asking Ed that posted into the chat that he said the high was
right, okay.
27 where he was, and I was asking where he was right then because I didn't know where he know where he was talking about. He says he's in western Pennsylvania. The high is 27. Yeah, well, you know what? I'm sure you're used to that, and if you are, then you've got you have your own specific everyday carry and vehicle carry and everything else for that, which is it's going to have to be amended for cold weather. One of the reasons I live in Texas is because I don't want to have to deal with a high of 27. I like you. I'm like you, Rachel. I like it to think about 40 degrees as being the bottom line of cold.
Exactly.
I don't really need it to go any colder than that. I'm perfectly cold at 40. So yeah, we're supposed to get weather down to around 38 degrees here, and that's plenty cold enough for me too. Well, Rachel, thanks for calling in. You got anything else that you'd like to add?
No, nothing I can think of.
Well, hold on just a second. We got somebody else calling in here. Area code 412. You're on the air.
Hey, Scott. It's Ed. I just thought I'd let you
speak
in public.
I hope that you're bundled up if it's 27 there.
27 is quite chilly for this time of year up here. It's not terribly usual. It's usually in the upper 40s, maybe low 50s this time of year, but 27, we're having a nice front go through, and it's not going to be pleasant.
It's that global warming that's hitting you guys right now. Well, what is something special that you carry in your car, since you guys are a lot more prone to hitting snowed-in roads and stuff like that? What is something like that you guys there in the that you don't get in your car and drive off without having it in your vehicle?
I don't generally have the problem because I went out and got a four-wheel drive car. It's at least where I'm at, it doesn't usually snow enough that you're getting snowed in. But, there are certain precautions that everybody should take. I mean, I certainly have blankets, in the car. I have my, get home bag in the car, which I repack for winter every year. So that has, some nice warm clothes in it so that, if suddenly I found myself broken down on a road and, there was just no hope of getting out until morning, I could bundle up and, survive the night.
Well, I know that all of the folks, in the Northeast, and I'm sure they're probably wherever it's cold, but when I was up there in the winter, one thing I noticed is that everybody had like two or three of those the little blades that you use to clean the ice off your windshield. Everybody's cars had those in them.
Yeah. It's that's something I don't even think about because that pretty much just stays in the car year round at this point.
Right.
Obviously, I don't need it in the summer, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense to take it in and out.
Right.
Yeah, the car scraper is a wonderful device for when you get that freezing rain.
Right, because everybody up there has those in their vehicles. I mean, it's just a part of their gear.
The other big item for everybody to have up here is I know a lot of people that put a bag of cat litter in their car. And, you know, that's for traction. You know, you put it under your tires. And unlike salt, if it gets too cold, salt doesn't work. So cat litter always works.
So folks put the cat litter in there?
Yeah, just, you know, you put a bag of cat litter in your car and you use it for traction if you get stuck in the snow. You take out the bag and you throw some of the cat litter underneath your tires.
Huh. Well, I guess that would work.
You know, it's when I was a young 20-something, I lived in Houston for about 6 months. And I remember being down there, and they had their first snowstorm in like 20 years, and it was quite amusing to me as someone from the north, watching people, you know, on all the highways there, they go up and down because they have to go over top of the roads that they're crossing. The highway does, you know, because of all the feeder ramps and everything. And it was quite funny because people were getting caught in the middle of it, and they were trying to go up. And then they would slide back down. I understand a little bit of the confusion of Texas and snow.
Yeah, well, we had very little snow, but I mean, we'll get it every once in a while. Of course, everybody, you know, it's part of the rules, part of the law here that if there is snow in any form or fashion, if you can see it, like on the highway or something, everybody is obligated to start closing their eyes and ramming into each other. It's just you know, part of the rules here in Texas. And they shut the, you know, if you can see any snow on the highway anywhere too, it's also we have to shut all the schools down, get all the kids home, stuff like that. And my wife always laughs about that.
You know when California does that, right? California does that at the first rain. And the first time it rains in the fall, it's like, oh my God, smash.
Well, the problem go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I lived out in California for a number of years, and it was always very weird in the fall when you got that first rain, and you just have accidents everywhere because nobody bothered slowing down, going, oh, the road's wet. Maybe I should slow down.
Right. Well, the thing is with, like, the first rain, because we'll get that every once in a while here, too, in the summer when we'll go for, you know, a month, 2 months, or 3 months without rain, you get 3 or 4 months of oil leaking onto the highway and stuff like that. It doesn't get rinsed off, you know, once every week or 2 weeks, you know, like at other times of the year. Then the rain hits it, and now you've got that 3 months of oil drippage and everything else on the highway, and it makes it really rough. Now we have,
yeah.
We will also get every once in a while, we'll get the black ice here too. Not that often, but every once in a while we will, and I mean, I got into a situation like you're talking about with the black ice and two little rises. They couldn't have been more than 35 or 40 feet, but I couldn't get out of the little valley I was in because of the black ice. I mean, I spent about an hour you know, going down one hill and going up the other and trying to back and forth, thinking that maybe at some point I'll wear the ice down to the asphalt or something, but I didn't. The only way I got out of there finally was getting a solid run downhill on one side and driving out into the ditch, you know, on the other side and going up the hill in the ditch. But everybody has their, you know, their little things that they're ready for. You know, up in the Northeast, you know, you could get a whole bunch of snow, and they've got all the gear ready. But you know, by the time the snow hits, all of the vehicles are out there, and they've got these all the roads cleared and salted down before everybody even wakes up in the morning.
Yeah, when there's going to be a snowstorm in the Northeast, I mean, and this will probably be new information for you, but you actually have trucks that go out and they spray this salt and water mixture on the roads, and it just dries and sits on the roads waiting for the snow to arrive, so that the snow immediately starts melting, you know, once it, you know, wets that salt mixture up. So they have a lot of interesting strategies for dealing with it. It's usually pretty effective, unless you get if you're closer to the Great Lakes and you get lake effect snow, that can be really interesting. Usually where I'm at, we don't get that. But you know, a few years ago, we got, you know, 30 inches within a 1 week span, and that was too much. So.
Right. Here they just, it only takes a half inch, you know, and everybody goes crazy. The folks rush outside and try and roll up what little bit of snow they have into dirty, you know, leaf sticking out of them snowmen, and then it lasts about 2 hours and it's gone. That's all that we have here.
The go crazy level for here is 6 to 8 inches. So, but I also lived in Minnesota, and their go crazy was like, oh, 2 feet, yeah, no problem. So, it's every part of the country has its own way of coping with this.
Yeah, Minnesota is a little bit different. The only time I've really been there for winter was what I told you guys about. I've been there for the winter warfare school in, I believe it was early February, and we got down to, I think it was almost 72 degrees below zero in the middle of a storm, and
that was just
wind cold. No.
That was with wind chill?
Yeah, whatever, everything figured into it. That wasn't the temperature of whatever it was, but that was what everything figured into it. It was 72 degrees below zero, and it was very cold. And we were stuck out in the middle of the woods on the end of a 7-day operation. And we went down into a little ravine, and put our tent up and piled snow up against it and everything, and climbed inside. We had a kerosene stove, and it wasn't bad at all. You know, we weathered through it fine the next day. But it just made me think of why would anybody ever live there, you know, if that happened, you know, on a regular basis. But the folks that live there, you know, they're geared up for it. So everybody has, you know, everybody has things that they're geared up, you know, to go through there. You know, wherever they live, they have things that they're geared up to accept and to work through. Well, listen, guys, I think we're just about at the end of the show here. I want to thank everybody for calling in tonight, and everybody for listening. Next week, I talked to Sheriff Richard Mack this week. This next Thursday, he's going to come on the show and let us know what he's been doing with the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association over the last year. He was on the show about a year ago. He's going to come on and let us know what the CSPA is doing and what we can do to help out. So you guys be sure and tune in next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central. And thanks, everybody, for listening tonight. And God bless and keep you all.